Hey, welcome to the Innovation Mindset Podcast, powered by the Jim Moran College of Entrepreneurship. I am Mark McNeese, your host. And in studio today, we have Eric Ligori, the Associate Dean of the Jim Moran College of Entrepreneurship. Hey, Eric, thanks for coming in.
Hey, Mark, thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. So you're relatively new here. Tell us a little bit about your past kind of academic career and your path to the Jim Moran College.
Sure, I'm new. I'm less than 90 days back in Tallahassee, and I say back in because I am from Florida. I did do my undergraduate here. So in some ways, it's a very different campus than it was when the dinosaurs and I were here earlier. And in other ways, it feels like being home. So I was at FSU. I did my undergrad here in the College of Business. Went back down to the Tampa area, ultimately did my MBA at USF a few years later, and a little bit of work experience later, went and did my PhD at LSU, and then been in academia ever since. So I was at Fresno State for a few years, moved back, was at University of Tampa. And then for the last 6.5 years, I was building the School of Innovation and Entrepreneurship at Rowan University up outside of Philadelphia. And now super excited to be back in the warmer weather and back to great colors and here at FSU.
Awesome. We're excited to have you here. And you've done a lot of very interesting things. I met you when you were the president of USOSB. Want to tell us a little bit about USOSB and your role there and your connection?
Sure. USOSB is the largest academic organization dedicated to advancing entrepreneurship education through both teaching, scholarship, and practice. And wow, when you aren't president anymore, you get out of the habit of saying it that way. But it's a pretty large membership organization, mostly in the US, and always fun to see people from all different universities coming together, sharing best practices, meeting new people, connecting students in interesting ways. It's something I look forward to every year. I think it's something that a lot of us sort of academic and practitioner, sort of entrepreneurship educator type people look forward to every year. A great chance to just steal new ideas from other places and meet interesting people.
Yeah, I've really appreciated USOSB. I think when I first went, I think you were the current president there, or maybe Mark was, I don't remember. But yeah, I've met some great people from lots of different universities and have been able to write some papers with them. And as you're saying, lots of like interesting topics and being exposed to lots of really cool ideas. That's amazing. So I am going to want to ask you about experience, but before we jump into that, I wanted to talk a little bit about your research. You're a very well-known researcher in this field of entrepreneurship. Could you tell us a little bit about your research, what you focus on, and maybe what you're working on now?
Sure. Yeah, I really focus primarily on entrepreneurship. That's my main space for research. And more specifically, I'm looking at best practices in pedagogy and entrepreneurship education.
Okay. Can you define pedagogy for us?
The teaching and learning of entrepreneurship.
All right, gotcha. Thank you.
I'm looking at things around entrepreneurial ecosystems and sort of these communities that emerge, whether they're geographic or cultural or virtual, and how those communities help support and uplift entrepreneurs. And then I'm looking at some stuff around public policy and how the research that we do in entrepreneurship can better inform practice and policy.
Can you give us an example of that?
Sure. Certainly, as policymakers are looking at implementing any number of different pieces of legislature, they're wanting to know what the economic impact of that decision might be. As academics, we're constantly in assessment mode, mm-hmm. so to speak. And so trying to figure out how to build a better bridge between the research that gets done within the walls of academia and the decision-making that gets done at more of a policymaker level so that those two parties can work together to help us achieve better outcomes moving forward for everybody.
Okay, fantastic. So you were talking about building communities and researching entrepreneurial communities and things like that. Are you talking more about accelerators and things like that, or what kind of communities have you been researching and what have you seen is effective?
Sure. I guess we've been looking at a variety of different things. So not specifically incubators or accelerators, although those tend to be prominent members of any given entrepreneurial ecosystem. But looking at anything from culturally, how does this community view entrepreneurship? We've got different parts of the world where failure is really considered fatal. Mm-hmm. And in entrepreneurship, you have to be okay with some level of failure, right? It's inevitable for everybody along their journey, whether that's at the whole venture level and the whole business fails, or whether that's just certain decisions fail. But we definitely have different communities around the world where failure is not culturally acceptable,
right,
or embraced. And that can have a stifling effect on someone's decision to go and embark on an entrepreneurial journey. So looking at things like culture, looking at supports and what support systems are in place for entrepreneurship, looking at policy, and do we have policies that are friendly towards entrepreneurship or unfriendly towards entrepreneurship? And that can be something as taken for granted as the intellectual property system, then the patent system in the US that's pretty well established, pretty defined, or it could be the tax and incentive structure on different types of businesses, different industries, different transactions, the cost of labor. So we're really looking holistically at any of these factors that can impact the environment in which people go and try to operate and start businesses.
Are you focusing more on national or state or municipality level? Where do you, or is it all three?
So I think that there's differences that happen at each level, right? So certainly local towns can have different requirements for small businesses around the cost of certain types of licenses. I used to live in Fresno, California, and my apartment literally looked out over Clovis, California, right? They're right next door to each other. But to go and start a bar, for example, in Fresno, the occupational license cost could be very substantial. I'm sorry, in Clovis could be very substantial. To go and start that same bar across the street in Fresno, it was exponentially cheaper. Fast forward to living up in New Jersey. If you want to go and open a bar up there, just the licensing could be very restricted. There might only be two or three licenses in a town, and it could be a multi-million dollar process. Whereas in other parts of the country, that license could be $2,500. At the state level, certainly you've seen different governors over the last 5 or 6 years advertising in other states, come to my state, we're more business friendly.
Right.
So there's certainly state level dynamics, and that can impact the cost of labor, that can impact the overall affordability, but that also has to do with maybe the legal structure and protections in that state. So there's a lot of variation there. And then nationally, in the US, we take it for granted, everything's standardized across all of the states. But if you start comparing the US system to what's going on in Europe, to what's going on in other parts of the world, you do see differences in different areas. And sometimes the intellectual property protection system between the US and the EU, a lot of similarities, some differences, but a lot of similarities, good levels of protection. But culturally, there might be very big differences.
Right.
So I think we look at them in all of those levels. And I think that's how a lot of ecosystem research has been conceptualized. What's more interesting to me as of late is the notion of campus entrepreneurial ecosystems and the notion of other community or group ecosystems. And we've got a new paper out that looks at Black and African-American entrepreneurship. And what's interesting there is the sense of community that exists is so powerful. And so I do think we see incubators and accelerators start to pop up that focus on specific populations. And those form their own little communities. Investor networks come in and start to focus on those communities. And all of a sudden, that community has its geographically agnostic entrepreneurial ecosystem. And so now what I'm really starting to get interested in is if you were to picture a Venn diagram of sort of three overlapping circles, right? If you have a geographic ecosystem and you have a university ecosystem and you have some other type of ecosystem, wow, how powerful it would be as an entrepreneur if you could tap into the sweet spot of all three of those.
Who's the gold standard in that model, or have you found one? What city?
A lot of people would say that Silicon Valley is leading the way. And a lot of people would argue that Silicon Valley used to be leading the way.
Right.
And then there's a lot of literature, a lot of people have suggested, and I think this is where I kind of land, that every one of these communities is so different. So the idea of replicating what's working in Silicon Valley and taking that and putting it in Tallahassee, Florida,
right,
is pretty silly, right? We don't have the same strengths, but we also don't have some of the weaknesses. It's mm-hmm. a cheaper place to live. It's a lower cost of human capital in some ways, but we have less of a populace of human capital to draw from. So every city, every location is going to have its strengths and its weaknesses. I think the hardest part is figuring out what really works in a given place.
Absolutely. No, that's really interesting. Was when you were here as an undergrad, was Midway, the city of Midway, happening yet? Or do you know about Midway?
I feel like I don't know about Midway. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No worries. So Midway might be a great paper for you to write. It's midway between here and Havana, and hence the name Midway.
I think I drove through there.
I'm sure you
it's
did.
It's like a cool little downtown.
No cool downtown. It's basically an industrial park. It's a city that basically came out of restrictive policies in Tallahassee for building, and especially industrial type buildings and things like that. And they decided to do tax incentives and be really open to like concrete businesses and contractors and things like that. So this whole huge community grew up as a response to Tallahassee being restrictive, especially 20 years ago. It was very restrictive. It was a good old boy network where pay to play and all those kinds of things. And if you knew somebody, the permitting process was a lot easier. They've cleaned it up a lot. I lived it with building Red Eye and different buildings around town and everything. And it was challenging, and definitely Midway's an interesting just case study of a whole community growing up based as a response to restrictive entrepreneurial policies. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about your past entrepreneurial experience. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. Like anyone who's ever dabbled here, I've had some ones that have fallen flat on my face and some that are still interesting to watch. At this point, I have a lot less time to be as hands-on or all in, so I'm more passively investing. And I've got three, I guess, projects in that regard right now. When I was doing my MBA, I guess that's where I really got the first bug for this. I stumbled into an internship working at the Small Business Development Center. Just haphazardly, I'm like, oh, I should probably have something to put on my resume if I'm going to graduate school. And so I started working there and really just looking at the impact that small business was having on the economy. I went through a variety of their training and certification programs and ultimately went full-time with them on the consulting and advising side. And that was an interesting path. And I was an HR major when I was at FSU. I always intended to go into corporate human resources. I never really said, oh, I want to be in small business or entrepreneurship. But here I am driving down to Sarasota every day now, working with these companies, going to chamber events, learning that language a little bit. Fast forward from there, I started working for a company that did HR outsourcing. And so this was an interesting opportunity for me because I was in the HR space and we're going into all these small businesses, your 12 to 250 person companies, and working with them to be their outsourced HR solution. And we handled payroll and benefits and all those fun things. So in some ways it was very HR, but in other ways it was very much looking at all of these different systems running with inside a business and how is this business really working and what challenges are they experiencing. And it's always fun because you could go into a local plumbing company that could have 20 or 30 vans or trucks that are out every day and making millions of dollars a year, doing a fantastic business. And you start talking to that founder, that owner, and it's what's keeping this person up at night. And it was usually something that you would just never know on the outside was even going on. Something as simple as, oh, my non-employee payroll is just really high, right? I'm paying both of my kids, my mom, my mother-in-law. I'm worried about how the cash flow is working on that side. Or I had one business, this is a great story, and it's still in business, so I don't want to give away who it was. But this was a business that ran an event and experience. So think of a tour bus that would take you out on some kind of a tour, or a boat that would take you out on some kind of a ride. And this entrepreneur went and had hidden cameras installed in the middle of the night so that none of the employees would know.
Know what?
That they were being recorded.
Oh, okay.
They were being recorded so that she could essentially spy on these employees. And so then I get there, I go to this meeting. She's like, Eric, we have a big problem. this person was doing this and I saw it on my video camera, but I can't tell them that I saw it on my video camera because they don't know that there's a video camera.
Oh gosh.
And you start getting into, okay, you just created a problem that didn't exist. And I'm not even sure what you're doing is legal at this point. I guess I got to the point where I'm looking at it and saying, I always thought that entrepreneurs were these mystical people who just were these brilliant pioneers that could go and start these companies and grow them. And it just wasn't for me. And what I really left this sort of role after about 2 years feeling like was, there's a lot of people who are just like me out there running these companies, starting these companies and figuring it out as they go and making mistakes as they go.
Right.
And maybe this is something that I could do. Maybe this is something that others like me could do. And so I thought that was really interesting. And then I decided to go and try to start a med tech startup. That didn't go well. It was a bunch of time and wasted revenue and all of that. At one point, it felt very paper rich, cash poor.
Mm-hmm.
It really hinged on some pending legislation that kept getting pushed back. And for me, I don't like companies that are legislatively dependent. I prefer the value proposition to be something that the entrepreneur is happy about versus something that's compliance driven. Fast forward to that, I make the decision to go and do a PhD, right? So now I'm thinking, okay, this would be cool to just go and teach and to do research. And I go to LSU, great school, into the business school, and I'm focused on management. Like, I was going to go and be an HR person. So I was still, even after all these experiences, saying HR is my path, HR is my industry, HR is where I was identifying my professional criteria or whatever being. And I made it about one semester in. And I just kept reading these papers and saying, what I'm reading here and what we did every day as I lived this for 4 or 5 years is so different. And it's so disconnected. And I'm just way too pragmatic a person to spend time on something that doesn't feel like it's going to help move the needle. Now, I made the switch to entrepreneurship because I felt like in entrepreneurship, things could be a lot more applied. We could bridge that gap more easily. We could move a little bit faster. It felt more relevant. Looking back on that decision, and those are the reasons I made it, I think that there are some real challenges to bridging the research we do and practice. I don't know that it's really that profoundly different in entrepreneurship or HR, but I have zero regrets. I get to research things that I find interesting. I get to work with interesting people in the community. I get to have really cool colleagues like you started fun companies that are recognizable around town. I find it energizing. So that's my path. It feels fairly linear, which is how we all tend to tell our stories. But
so let's talk a little bit about teaching entrepreneurship. I'm sure that you're hit with this question all the time. I get it all the time. Can you teach entrepreneurship? What's your thoughts on that? And how do you view entrepreneurship education, and what are some of the best practices?
I think you can teach almost anything. Usually people are asking born or made,
right?
Which kind of puts the burden on the student more than the instructor. So sure, you can definitely teach it. I think that entrepreneurship's an interesting field. And what, aside from being an FSU alum, what really was interesting to me, because I loved the job I had and we loved living up where we were, but what was really interesting to me about Florida State in entrepreneurship is the Jim Moran College is the first freestanding college of entrepreneurship in the country, right? There's really only 8 or 10 kind of colleges and schools of entrepreneurship out there to begin with, but to be the only freestanding, fully independent college is just really an interesting place to be. And then when you look at the makeup of our faculty and the diversity that we have of researchers, of practitioners, of people who've been out there and started multiple companies, of people who are doing really neat like product innovation research, it's an exciting place to be. Because I think students who come to FSU and come to the Jim Moran College get to work with a very wide variety of people all working towards this common goal of supporting ideas to market and supporting sort of economic independence through entrepreneurship and supporting how do we take entrepreneurship and use it as a mechanism to achieve societal goals. Any one of those things, very viable, right here. Mm-hmm. most universities put entrepreneurship in a business school.
Right.
And so you lose all of those credit hours to the business school prereqs. And there's nothing wrong with that. Great education. I went to FSU's business school. But here, we're allowed to, or able to take that same content and make it very domain specific to entrepreneurship. And so I think our students end up with an advantage in an entrepreneurship space afterwards as a result.
So, oh, awesome. Yeah. Thank you. thank you for that. So tell us a little bit about, you already told us a little bit, but a little bit more about like how you view the uniqueness of what we have here at FSU and the Jim Moran College of Entrepreneurship. And where are some areas that you think we can grow and shine that will really benefit the student?
Gosh. All right. So I already admitted to being a maybe overly candid person. And so I'll say something, and maybe it won't be the most favorable thing to say. I was not convinced that entrepreneurship, and I don't know that I'm still fully convinced, entrepreneurship needs to be its own major. I think entrepreneurship is a powerful force that should be a part of every degree program and every major. And so what's exciting to me here, and where I think growth is most likely, is pathways like that. The idea that we have synergistic programs that work with hospitality and entrepreneurship. The idea that we've got faculty now collaborating and working on projects that bridge entrepreneurship and sociology or social work, really interesting. And so I think that we're going to see more growth and partnerships at the degree level, at the research level, at the student startup level from the Jim Moran College and College A, College B, College C, all across campus. That is what I think is probably the future. And I think we're a step ahead of a lot of other universities in that regard.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that. Obviously, your whole life is not academia and entrepreneurship. Tell us a little bit about like you, what motivates you, what are you excited about, what do you love to do?
Oh, gosh. My wife and I both, we're very family-oriented people. So we like to spend time with family. My 4-year-old niece, I was never a children person per se. Mm-hmm. And then Paige was born. And now I'm just completely obsessed. We drove down over the weekend to Tampa and we got to see her and take her to a dance class. And
oh, fun.
That's the kind of stuff that excites me. Just spending time with family, seeing her face just light up is always exciting. And I had bought her a stuffed dinosaur that had this heart on it that admittedly was like 75% off after Valentine's Day. And I'm like, oh, it's purple. She'll like this. And man, the amount of joy you spark for $2.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like working with others on interesting projects and having some variety. I like things that convene people, putting together teams, finding ways for different types of people to collaborate and move ideas forward is really interesting to me. I don't always have the longest attention span. And so I like to have my hand in a few different things at any point in time. So I can pick something up, put something down, pick something up and put something down. And I don't know if that's as much a passion or my work style, but it's worked for me either way.
Right on. So we have a lot of students obviously listening to this. So what kind of projects or problems students are having or advice that they need, should they seek you out for example, anything to do with like social entrepreneurship or ESG or anything like that? Students seek me out. What would you say your area of expertise is, especially when working with undergrads and grads? Like if they have a certain thing they want to learn, what should they come to for you?
So I actually think that I'll take a step back on that. I think where maybe I'm strongest is helping people figure out who they need to talk to, what question they need to ask,
okay,
and how to get access to the type of person they need to ultimately get in front of. And I will work with students on a variety of problems. I like the fundamentals of the business model. I like the process by which you go through customer discovery to determine your financial assumptions. I think that's really interesting. Figuring out, can we acquire customers at a cost that ultimately is financially sustainable for the venture? I think that's always a fun exercise and something to look at. And I like franchising. I love the model of franchising.
Okay.
And so that's another interesting space. I don't know that I would say I was the person to go to for social, but that's what we have you for. Although it is one of my more favorite classes to teach, because I think you see light bulbs go off more there than anywhere else. And maybe what I'm not the best at, I don't want to do financials.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to sit and work on
spreadsheets and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Cool. I always like to end the podcast with asking the guest if they could go back and, or if you could go back and tell 20-year-old Eric one thing about anything, what would you tell yourself?
I was thinking about this 3 days ago, and I don't know if this is the answer you're going for, but I think what I would tell 20-year-old Eric, knowing what I know now, is every time you thought you should buy this house and you didn't, buy the house. And every time you thought you should sell this house and you did, don't sell the house.
Gotcha.
So if I think back to just like major decisions and things that I would do differently, it's pretty universal. I shouldn't have bought when I bought, shouldn't have sold when I sold, but I don't regret any of it. I think you learn through the journey and the process, and I've moved a lot. Ultimately ended up back, generally speaking, where I started, at least in Florida. Mm-hmm. I don't regret any of those. I've got great friends all over. I think I would say be willing to take some of those risks. And I moved to Louisiana not knowing a soul there. And then I moved to, only did it saying, because then I'll move back to Florida. And then instead I moved 2,000 miles further away. And I've got great friends out in California now. And so I'd say it's a very low risk situation in your early 20s to make big decisions like that.
Awesome. Eric, thank you so much for coming in and spending some time with us. And I know that our listeners are going to love getting to know you a little bit better. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Innovation Mindset Podcast powered by the Jim Moran College of Entrepreneurship. If you like this episode, please hit subscribe so you don't miss the next great ones, and hit and share. And we will see you next time.